Now back to the Tribune's Rick Pearson. It's the Sunday Spin on 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson here in the Allstate Showcase studio in historic Tribune Tower on North Michigan Avenue. And joining me on the phone is my good friend Brian Mackey, state government and politics reporter for NPR Illinois. Brian, good morning and thanks for joining me.
Good to talk to you, Rick.
And there's no shortage of things to talk about.
No.
Well,
it's one of those weeks.
Yeah, and it seems like they're always one of those weeks, right?
Yeah, that's the pace of it these days.
We've been talking a lot this morning about Governor Rauner's budget message, and we just heard from Illinois Senate Republican leader Bill Brady about his take, and I appreciate the leader representing the party by referring to it as a balanced budget. I would suggest that maybe it's a more comprehensive framework than we've seen in the past, but again, not a balanced budget.
Yeah, well, I mean, in the sense, I guess the bar was set pretty low last year because the governor just had sort of one line that said $4.7 billion working together on a grand bargain.
So, yeah, that was kind of the Hail Mary pass of the...
Right, as long as, in the sense that there was not that sort of, like, huge gaping hole. I mean, yes, he does account for all the dollars and cents, but it requires a lot of changes in laws to get those to happen. And not just changes in laws in order to get everything to happen, but he really needs the Democrats to abandon longtime ideology and political positions and just completely come over to, basically what's a rebranded version of the turnaround agenda he's been pushing for the last few years.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at things like removing group health insurance from collective bargaining.
Right. Right. I mean, that has been the main thing that's been holding up, or one of the main things that's been holding up. I mean, state government workers who are in the AFSCME union, which represents tens of thousands of people who work in state government, they haven't had a contract since the first 6 months of the governor's administration. And the reason that has come to an impasse, or seems to be at an impasse, that's actually a legal term that people are fighting about now.
Right.
The reason they haven't been able to come to an agreement is largely because of what the governor wants to do to change health care costs for state workers and increase them. And full disclosure, I mean, my radio station is part of a state university. I would be affected by that as well.
Well, and so there's issues always come down to collective bargaining matters. And even in these concepts of doing the shifting of pensions to local school districts that he calls for, obviously, coupled with that would be, quote, mandate relief, which in the view of several Republicans, including the governor, would mean changing collective bargaining.
Yeah, this year he calls them giving local governments, school districts, the tools they need to manage costs, which, again, is just another way of saying what he's been saying all along, that, I mean, he is not a fan of public employee unions. He's been more and less clear about that, depending on what audience he's talking to and in what phase of his campaign he's in. But he just does not think that it's really right that people be able labor unions be able to bargain for benefits and wages, and he would rather just have public employee unions bargaining over work conditions and just have the governments be able to set the wages and benefits. I mean, that's his ultimate vision. And then he's, outlined a series of steps to try and get there. But the Democrats just do not want to go along with that plan whatsoever. And probably if they were being, in their hearts, a lot of Republicans might not want to go, about that plan. I mean, remember, downstate is a largely Republican area, and there are a lot of state employees who work downstate in state prisons and other institutions and places like that.
Well, and, when you look at a budget and I term what's doable, and
right,
you throw these positions out there, they're ideological positions, but not necessarily doable positions.
Yeah, and to be fair, I mean, the budget situation in Illinois, even though they raised taxes last year, I think anyone who looks at the budget in sort of a dispassionate, non-political way say they probably did not raise taxes enough. I mean, they settled on a number that was just below 5%, but that was after 2 years of the budget impasse where, this is not intuitive, but we actually spent a lot more than we probably would have had we had a real budget in place, because so much as the courts came in and ordered a lot of spending on health care and state employee pay and you know, there's a lot of money that just, as you know, has to go out the door to pay off, you know, old pension costs and pay off bondholders for the state of Illinois. So we spent more than we took in during the budget impasse. So we built up this backlog of bills, the state's debt, effectively. And so, I mean, he does have a hard problem to solve to balance the budget. And, you know, if the Democrats and Republicans in the legislature choose not to use his, I think you called it a framework, they're going to have a hard problem to solve in balancing or coming up with a budget that's even, you know, balanced on paper.
Well, and even, you know, even to the point of whether you agree or disagree with what the governor is suggesting here, it is now the ball is in the Democrats' court and as the controlling party in the General Assembly.
It is, but I think there's also going to be, we're going to see a lot of pressure on and perhaps even from those 16 or some number of those 16 Republicans who broke ranks last year to work with the Democrats on passing a budget for the first time in 2 years and raising taxes. And there are quite a lot of lame ducks in the legislature this year. I think we're up to, I don't know if it was 24 or 30, I don't have the exact number off the top of my head, of people who are leaving the General Assembly who, you know, might be willing to cast a more politically unpopular vote. I'm not saying I would be surprised if we had another tax increase, but I think that does give us, you know, better chances of getting an actual budget at some point in, you know, the next fiscal year than we've had in the last few before that.
Yeah, and I'm kind of torn in what I think will happen, whether that we will get a full budget or we just get a maintenance 6 month budget and kind of punt it to the whoever the next governor is.
Yeah, well, that's interesting, because, of course, that's kind of what happened back in 2014 when people
right.
were, you know, they thought they didn't want to, because the income tax, it was set at 5 percentage points for the individuals there, and it was going to sink, and it was scheduled to roll back at the end of the year, and they thought, well, we'll just punt it and make the next governor deal with it, or whether that be, you know, Governor Quinn reelected or Governor Rauner. And I think, you know, maybe some people learned a lesson that that wasn't the best strategy back then. From that standpoint, because that led to the budget impasse. So,
yes, and but it's not going to be easy, regardless, to try to put together any kind of a true fiscal framework.
No, and it's because, you know, they fudged a lot last year too in the budget, right? That this current year that we're, oh, I say last year, the current year that we're in, we're supposed to have $200-300 million from selling the Thompson Center. Well, that hasn't happened yet. So the governor put that in his budget, and, you know, as far as I know, you can only sell a building once.
Right.
So, you know,
well, this is Chicago, you know.
Right. We can be creative about it. But so, you know, that's $200-300 million we're going to have to make up, and there are other shortfalls other places. There were things that they did that are, you know, budget gimmicks, kind of one time revenues. You sweep a bunch of funds. Illinois has this crazy number of funds that, you know, we have one fund from the fees we collect from doctor licensing, one fund from this, one fund from that, and, you know, sometimes money builds up in those and they can just kind of go in and sweep that money up, but you can't necessarily do that every year either. And now we have this, you know, voters in the last election approved a so-called lockbox on the road fund and transportation money, and that's only supposed to be used for transportation. So, you know, there's just a little less flexibility every year you go into this, you know, because of the past spending and how much money we need to make up ground on. So it's going to be a challenge.
Brian, my favorite fund that the state of Illinois has is the Lust Fund.
The Lust Fund, yes.
Leaking underground storage tanks, folks. That's
right,
what that fund means, okay?
For the gas stations that would have leaky tanks. I'm partial to the Dry Cleaner Environmental Recovery Trust Fund.
Yes, indeed.
Strangely named fund.
Okay, that's our geekiness for right now.
Okay.
We're speaking with Brian Mackey, state government and politics reporter for NPR Illinois. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. This is your Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune here in the Allstate Showcase Studio in Tribune Tower on North Michigan Avenue. Joining me on the phone, Brian Mackey, state government and politics reporter for NPR Illinois. Brian, we were talking obviously about the budget and budget issues. There's that, I call it the bright, shiny object, the governor dangling the prospect of a $1 billion tax cut if changes were made regarding state pensions. And I tend to think that is something that is more of a campaign slogan than anything else. Just as I mentioned to Leader Bill Brady, the Senate Republican leader, that would take years to litigate.
Yeah, definitely. And that's it's pretty striking. He just a week before his budget address, he was giving a speech in Springfield to the Sangamon County Republicans at their Lincoln Day dinner, and he told them, "I'm going to bring your, you know, we're going to keep going." He's trying to fire up the crowd. "We're going to bring your taxes down to 3% over the next 2 years." And there was nothing that would get there in his budget address. Instead of, I mean, that would require a 1.7 percentage point drop, or almost a 2% drop in the tax rates. He proposed a 0.25% drop in the tax rate that would probably take 2.5-3 years if it even got through the courts, if this pension change that he's pushing now, you know, is found to be constitutional, which is an open question.
Well, and some people just say, well, why not amend the Constitution and take out the pension clause, that pensions are a contractual right that cannot be diminished or impaired.
Yeah, and the governor is one of those people. I think that's one of the 44 points of his original turnaround agenda. But, of course, changing the Constitution would require going before the voters and getting their approval. And even if you do change the Constitution, that can affect future employees. But the language of the Constitution, it doesn't just say pensions are protected. The specific wording is important. It says pensions are membership in a pension plan is a contractual right. And that goes, you know, that invokes, you know, not only state law and the state constitution, but the federal constitution and the English common law. So, I mean, the contractual rights is the basis of our economy, of our capitalist system. And so it's not clear that just by changing the constitution, you could get out of benefits that have already been accrued in the system and for people who are already in the system.
Yeah, it's highly questionable that you could make retroactive changes.
Yeah, absolutely. Although, you know, the Constitution means what it says it does until you can convince a panel of Supreme Court justices that it means something else. So I don't expect that in my lifetime we'll ever see people stop trying to change this, because there's just so much money at stake. You know, $130-140 billion, whatever the current unfunded liability is in our pension system.
Want to shift gears a little bit. We've seen Speaker Madigan forced to respond to an issue involving a former top political aide over the issue of sexual harassment involving a former campaign worker. A lot of questions going on about, obviously, the hashtag MeToo movement and how that's changing the dynamic all across the country in various occupations, but a new dynamic when it comes to political campaigns. There's not exactly an HR department that somebody can go to in a political campaign.
No, these are probably smaller organizations than most people realize. I mean, sure, your presidential campaign might have an HR department or something like that, but most of these are pretty small, pretty informal. People work long hours, and so it can be challenging. And it's, you know, the sort of setup where there's a power dynamic. You want to advance. You want to get hired for that next campaign, because a lot of these people just work on contracts. And so it can make it very challenging. If somebody feels they're being harassed by a supervisor, who do you go to? And, of course, the speaker, you know, having the mystique of being the speaker, I think people probably like to not go to him with things unless, you know, it's a really bad problem. And as you said, the person who is alleged to be doing the harassing behavior in this case was one of the speaker's top political aides for many, many years. And that just made it a very difficult situation for the woman who was one of the, you know, sort of lower level campaign workers, but, you know, still had been active in the Madigan political organization for several election cycles now. She was getting these text messages from this aide, and, you know, trying to ask her out and urging her again and again. And, you know, from what your newspaper published, it looked like she was pretty firm and pretty clear to me about saying, "I'm not interested, I'm not interested, I'm not interested." And yet it continued. And even after she went to her supervisor and, you know, reported it, who happened to be the alleged harasser's brother, Alderman Marty Quinn in Chicago, this person was not removed from the campaign apparatus, and ultimately she felt she had to leave.
And so questions about how the speaker responded. He said he received a letter from the woman and that he directed an internal investigation using a lawyer tied to the party to conduct this investigation, and that began in November, and it ended apparently pretty close to the same time that the Tribune was going to run this story last Monday.
Remarkably close, although they do deny any connection, and this, the attorney for the speaker says she was not aware that the Tribune was working on a story, but it is almost the exact same time that they finally decided to fire this aide, as the Alina Hampton, the woman who's alleging this behavior, went and spoke with one of your colleagues at the Tribune.
Optics being optics. And so now we see the speaker saying he has to do better.
Yeah, which is a change in this. This is one of these situations that it's moving day by day. I thought Mark Brown at the Sun-Times had an interesting take. You know, the speaker's used to fighting Republicans. He's used to fighting Democrats. But the Me Too movement is even more powerful than the speaker, perhaps. And so we saw early in the week he held a news conference to address some of these questions. And he basically stood behind his lawyer, which is very unusual. If he decides to talk to the media, I mean, you've been watching him longer than I have. He usually talks. And if he doesn't, he doesn't. But I've never really seen him sit there and just point at his lawyer as people were asking, Mr. Speaker, what about this, what about that? And then he would just motion to his lawyer and she would answer. But by the end of the week, he was writing a letter to his members, the members of the House of Representatives, the Democrats, and saying, you know, I need to do better. And this old school mentality of, hey, knock it off, that's not good enough anymore.
Much more ahead. There's no doubt about that. Brian Mackey from NPR Illinois, thank you so much for joining me this morning.
It's good to talk to you, Rick. Have a good rest of your Sunday.
You as well.